We're doing our class in Navi. We're in the beginning of the book of Shmuel. Last week we finished the book of Shoftim. So our story begins with the woman who has the face of a monkey, one of the pious women of Jewish history. Her name is Hannah. Hannah is an extraordinary woman. But what can we do? Hannah was born with some type of aberration in her face. And Hannah is one of the most unpleasant looking women that ever lived. As the Medrash says, she has the face of a monkey. And she is married to Elkanah, the great sage of the time, a prophet of the time. And Elkanah has a second wife. Her name is Peninnah. Peninnah has 7 children, and Hannah has no children. Elkanah is a descendant of Korach. Right? We know Korach was swallowed by the earth as he challenged Moshe Rabbeinu. The reason our sages say Korach had the gall to challenge Moshe Rabbeinu was because he saw that he was destined to greatness. That greatness was the son that Elkanah was yet to have, Shmuel. Shmuel, who will ultimately be the son of Elkanah, is described as equaling both Moshe and Aaron together. Moshe v'Aaron b'Kohanav, u'Shmuel b'Korei Shemo. Shmuel is a giant. And Elkanah has no children from his wife, Hannah. So Elkanah is a man that's highly regarded. And Elkanah ascends to bring sacrifices every year to the temple, which is at that time in Shiloh. Shiloh is just north of Jerusalem. And Elkanah would ascend every year, always using a different journey, always telling the people as he'd camp in their town, they'd all come to greet the great rabbi who'd come to their town, and he'd say, I'm going to the temple, why don't you come with me? And slowly, this way, he encouraged the people to also ascend to bring their sacrifices in Shiloh. So, it was a Yom Tov. It was a Yom Tov. And Elkanah came to Shiloh. And he gives Peninnah and her sons and daughters their portion of the meat. And to Hannah he gives the nicest portion. And he tries to show her warmth and love because he loves Hannah. And Hannah can't have kids. And every time Peninnah would see how nicely Elkanah would treat Hannah, so Peninnah would say to Hannah, Hannah, can I pass you a plate for one of your kids? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't have any kids. Hannah, I heard there's a great sale on babies' clothing. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot, you don't have babies. Peninnah would torment Hannah. And deep down inside, Peninnah's intention was that if she torments Hannah, then Hannah would pray more fervently and she would have kids. And it worked. But Peninnah was punished for doing that. So even though Peninnah had good intentions and ultimately what she did worked, her tormenting would ultimately lead Hannah to pray such that Hannah would have kids. But we're not supposed to do that to another Jew. We're not supposed to torment them thinking, that way they'll pray better. So every year this went on. And so one year she cried. She was so hurt by Peninnah. She couldn't eat. And Elkanah tells her, Hannah, why do you cry? Why won't you eat? Why are you so embittered? I love you more than all 10 children that Peninnah's given me. And Hannah looks at that and Elkanah says, you have me and I love you so much. And Hannah says, so you're not interested in kids anymore? That's not important to you? He says, I love you. I'm giving you what I can instead of kids. And she realizes she has to pray. So she gets up and leaves the table. Everyone's eaten and drank. And it is the day when they appointed the new leader of the Jewish people, Eli, the Kohen. And Eli had just been established as Kohen Gadol, and he's sitting at the entrance to the temple in Shiloh. And she is very embittered, and she cries to Hashem, and she says, Ribbono Shel Olam, you created all the stars, you created all the people, you can't give me any of them? Ribbono Shel Olam, you created angels in heaven and people in earth. Angels in heaven don't procreate, but don't die. People on earth procreate and do die. Either make me a human and let me have children. And if you don't do that, then make me an angel and I should never die. You can't do it both ways. You don't let me have kids, yet you're going to let me die. Which one is it? If I'm a human, give me kids. Ribono shel olam. Either you accept my prayer, or I'm going to go in seclusion with another man. Elkanah will warn me I shouldn't do that. I'll do it again, and then he'll make me drink the sota waters. And you promise in the Torah that if a woman drinks the sota waters, if she really has not done anything illicit, then she will have children, and I'll force you to give me children. So she says, Ribono shel olam, out of all the armies you created in the world, she's the first one that calls Hashem, Hashem Tzvakot, God of the armies. You created armies and armies in this world. You can't give me one of them. You can't give me one kid. So she's making all these claims towards heaven. And she says, Ribono shel olam, you created me a woman. On my chest, I have the ability to nurse. What'd you give me that for if you're not giving me kids? You created me different as a woman. Let me nurse kids. Please remember me. Remember my affliction and don't forget me. And if you give me a child, I want a child that won't be too tall or too short. Won't be too exceptional. People shouldn't look at him and stare at him and be jealous of him. Give me a child that's like the greatest men of Jewish history, like Moshe and Aaron. I will dedicate him to you his whole life. And he will be a Nazir. He will never shave his head. He will be yours, dedicated to you. And as she's praying quietly. From Chana we learn that when a person prays, their lips should move, but people around them shouldn't be able to hear what they say. Chana is speaking quietly, and no one could hear what she's saying. And Eli sees the wife of the leader of the Jewish people, Elkanah's wife, Chana, standing there and moving her lips. Seems like she's drunk. So Eli thinks she's drunk. Eli looks down at his choshen. Now the choshen, how big was the choshen? Half an amma by half an amma, right? It was just under his chin, right? The choshen would reach the heart. The bottom of the choshen would reach the heart. So the choshen is right here. And it has on it 12 stones. And on the stones we have the 12 tribes, plus the word Avram Yitzchak Yaakov Shiftei Kaf. He looks down and he sees light up. Shin, Kaf, Reish, Hey. He thinks it means Shikora, she's drunk. And really the letters lit up to tell him Kisara, she's like Sarah, she has no kids. But he misreads it. So he looks at her and he says, Lady, till when will you go drunk? Remove the wine from on you, you shouldn't be walking around the temple drunk. And she yells at him and says, No, you don't know what you're talking about. You didn't get the letters right. It should say Kishera, I'm a good person. You think you master prophecy? I understand you're the new high priest here. I'm suffering. I haven't drank anything. Here I am praying before Hashem, pouring my heart out before Hashem. From Chana we learn that if someone suspects you of doing something wrong, you should correct them. You shouldn't say, I don't care what he thinks. From Eli we learn that if you suspect someone of doing something wrong, and you're wrong in suspecting them, you better bless them afterwards, otherwise you get punished. And that's why Chana tells him, don't consider me like a pagan. If a person stands in prayer before his creator when he's drank wine, it's like a pagan. She says, I'm not that, and I'm sorry I spoke to you disrespectfully. Look at how I'm suffering. Don't think I'm worse than the other wife, Nina. She's so pious, and I'm not. I'm suffering. Eli tells her, I bless you that Hashem should grant you your wishes. He owes her a blessing. He suspected her illegitimately, and she thanks him. And when she leaves him, his blessing has already come true. She no longer has the monkey face. Number one, the aberration in her facial features is cured. She comes back. She's back to herself. The next morning, they pray. They go back home. And then Elkanah is intimate with his wife. From here we learn the halacha that when you're a guest at someone's house, you're not supposed to be intimate with your wife. Because ordinarily when people are intimate, so the male semen can get on the host's sheets. It's not nice that your host should see if you're intimate. It's not nice to leave him that dirt. If you bring your own bedding, then a person could be intimate in someone else's house, provided they could do it modestly. So they wait till they come home. And Chana is one of the people that on Rosh Hashanah, her fate was changed, right? We know, Rosh Hashanah nifkidu Sarah Rachel Chana, Sarah Rachel and Chana. Their lot was changed on Rosh Hashanah. And so a year later, she has a child and she names him Shmuel. Now everyone had heard a heavenly voice say that there would be a giant named Shmuel who would be the giant leader of the Jewish people. So everyone that had a baby that time was calling their kid Shmuel. But she did it for real. She said, I borrowed it from Hashem. And for the next 2 years, every time Elkanah goes up to bring a sacrifice, Hannah says, I'm waiting, because when I bring him up, he's staying there for good. I made a promise, I'm bringing him there. So when the 2 years are up, he stops nursing. That's the classical halacha. At 2 years old, a kid ordinarily stops nursing. And he's a genius. He's really, really smart. They bring a sacrifice. And when they show up to the temple in Shiloh, so the Kohanim there are Chofni and Pinchas, Eli's kids, and they're a little bit into themselves. They're not so quick to do the tasks of the Mikdash. Ordinarily, Kohanim are quick. They're not so quick. They take it easy. They're dealing with enjoying their own meat. So they show up there, and they want to bring a sacrifice, and there's no coin to be had. So they say, where's there a coin who could slaughter the animal? So Shmuel, the child, says, who needs a coin? They say, what do you mean, to slaughter the animal? Shmuel says, it doesn't work that way. It says in the Torah, slaughter the animal, and a coin will receive the blood. It seems like the Torah is saying, you don't need a coin to do the slaughtering, just to receive the blood. We'll slaughter, and then they'll run over. They'll receive the blood. They tell Shmuel, that's not what we've been saying here in the temple. We always assume the coin needs to do the slaughtering, but you have a good point. Let's go ask the chief rabbi. So they take Shmuel up to Eli, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, Eli, and they say to Eli, this kid just came here and told us this halachic ruling. Is he right? Eli says, yeah, he's right, but no one's supposed to be giving halachic ruling when I'm the boss here. That's called Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabo. He just gave halachic ruling in front of his Rebbe. I feel very bad for him. They said, why? He said, because a person who gives a halachic ruling in front of his Rebbe gets the death penalty. So I'm not sure this kid's going to live too long. So Chana begs him. She says, please, daven, he shouldn't die. Eli says, what do you want from me? He gave a halachic ruling here. If he's so smart, he should also know you're not allowed to give a ruling in front of a rabbi. What is he doing giving a ruling? Where I'm the chief rabbi. What do you want from me? She says, you gave me the blessing. This is the kid you promised me. Your blessing came true. He said, I'm willing to pray you should have another one. She says, no, I daven for this kid. I don't want this kid to die. You pray that he shouldn't die. So he did something wrong. Forgive him. And Elkanah Eli says, okay, I'll pray. And so Shmuel remains and becomes Eli's apprentice. Shmuel will remain up there in the temple. His first meeting with Eli was a rough one, where he had overstepped his bounds and taught halacha, which was correct, but he had no right to walk into the temple and start teaching halachot, where you have the Kohen Gadol, the Gadol Hador. So we have the famous song of Chana, where Chana speaks about how now she could talk against her enemy. Notice how she calls Pnina her enemy. We see how deep it is when one woman could hurt another woman who doesn't have kids, how sensitive we have to be for that. She says, none are like you, Hashem. None can wear you down. Human beings get worn down by their creations. If you build a car, the car tires you then. Fixing it, taking care of it. Hashem, you created a world. The world doesn't tire you. Ein tsur kelokeinu. There is no rock like our God, which also means there is no artist like our God. When I was in high school, so they had a cow made of plastic that you could dissect. The plastic, you could take apart the cow, and then you could take apart its heart, and then you could take apart the ventricles of the heart, and you could take apart the liver, and you could really, it was drawn to exact color and accuracy, where you could take apart piece by piece of the cow. They couldn't bring us a cow to dissect. So in science class, and when we learned chulin, we would actually take apart the cow. I know the ventricles of the heart. I know the stomachs of the cow, right? Because I actually took apart that cow numerous times, studying and learning the components of a cow. So Ein Tsayar, there's no artist like Hashem. When we make a painting, it can be one-dimensional, two-dimensional, three-dimensional, but Hashem makes it that there's a painting within a painting within a painting. There's intricacies, one on top of the other, of everything we see. Everything we see has layers of beauty. You see the external beauty, and if you know more about it, you see beyond that, and then you know more, you see beyond that, down to the atom. There's phenomenal beauty within beauty. That's Hashem's coloring. And so Chana says people shouldn't be so proud, because Hashem is the one that makes the game plan in this world. And even though people are brave and mighty, Hashem can break their strength. And then people who you look down at, what are they worth? Suddenly they could be up on top. You find people who are filled with wealth, and they have to rent themselves out. One day they lose all that wealth, and you see people who are hungry, and one day you see them up on top. Here you see, I was barren, I have 7 kids, and the other wife, Nina, had so many kids, and now she doesn't have. Our sages say, every time Chana gave birth to a child, 2 children of Pnina's would die. So she gave birth to Shmuel. 2 children of Pnina suddenly got a cold, got a cough, got a fever, and shortly thereafter died. She gave birth to her 2nd son, the next 2 kids died. 3rd son, the next 2 kids died. 4th son, the next 2 kids died. She was pregnant with her 5th kid, and Pnina came begging her. She said, I have to see the correlation. This isn't a coincidence that with every child that you had, I lost 2 kids. I'm down to my last 2. Can you please daven for me? They shouldn't die. And Chana did daven for her, and her last 2 kids did not die. But Chazal say that was Pnina's punishment. Here, she said, I'm doing it for the right intentions. I'm tormenting Chana. She should pray better. And then she needed those prayers to save her last 2 children. Chana says, Hashem is the one who gives life and death, who puts people down and who puts people up. He lifts the poor from the dust, and ultimately they can be philanthropists. Hashem is the one that establishes the world. So we have the song of Chana. Elkanah goes home and he leaves Shmuel behind, apprenticing by Eli. The problem is that Eli's children are misbehaving, Hophni and Pinchas. When a person would bring a sacrifice, they'd send their servant with a pitchfork. He'd bang on the pot and say, give me meat. And he'd say, whatever my pitchfork takes out, that's what the Kohanim get. Now the Jews would come up to the temple and they'd be disgusted. This is how the Kohanim behave. They'd say, wait, let me finish bringing my portion to God. And the lad would say, no, my Kohanim aren't waiting. They want the delicious meat when it's fresh, and either you give it to me or I take it by force. And people started looking at the temple as a place that they despised. So here we have something which is a recurring theme in the world, not only in Judaism, that people in positions of religion, and again, this isn't only in Judaism, can take advantage of their state to wield power and demand things from other people, and it causes the common folk to be disgusted with the religion. And in truth, it's only reflective of that person, not anything else. But it doesn't matter, you know, when someone was caught doing inappropriate things with cameras and a mikveh, so everyone got disgusted with the mikveh and disgusted with that rabbi and maybe rabbis in general. It's not fair, but it's a reality. When you see that, I got disgusted. You know, you look at that and you say, hey, there's something wrong here. So it's a weakness we all have, and that's the concept of Chilul Hashem. It's a huge challenge, and it's something I always tell the guys at Machon Meir. We love you guys, and we hope you guys love us. At the end of the day, you have to build a connection with God that is not contingent on man. And if one day you discover that the rabbi who helped you and led you and brought you and everything is suddenly found to be corrupt and doing things inappropriately, it does not change the truth of Judaism or what you've learned. We are humans. That means every rabbi you learn by has weaknesses. And every rabbi has things that they wish they were better at. And sometimes those weaknesses are bigger or smaller. And at the end of the day, your connection has to be to God and Torah. And even though we strive, and it's our job, that a Rav should be, hopefully, someone you look up to, and hopefully they live up to that admiration, but at the end of the day, there are disappointments. And a person has to be big enough to see beyond those disappointments. And their connection and their loyalty has to be to Hashem, not to a rabbi. Hopefully you also have a connection with someone, and hopefully through that you also grow. I will also mention that not every allegation is true. And a person can't always defend themselves. There was a rabbi in this community that they made allegations against. All the media spoke about it. No one heard when he was found scot-free that none of it was true. But it doesn't matter. When the allegation comes out, the disappointment is huge. And then when you suddenly discover people were trying to blackmail him, so they brought allegations against him, you don't necessarily hear that. And by the time you hear that, the disappointment is so huge that it might not even help. So that's it's a challenge. We shouldn't be quick to believe what we hear. And even if, unfortunately, we believe what we hear, so then there's nothing we can do. We move on. There's no, and that demands us to be big. But that also means that as we build ourselves, our relationship should not be contingent only on one person. We're building a relationship with Hashem. Our relationship with the rabbi is very important. It says, Aseilech HaRav, try to make for yourself a teacher. But we all are human, and we fall. Look at David HaMelech. David HaMelech didn't fall. So David HaMelech, right? We admire King David. Yet he had areas where he fell, and that's human. I'm saying, Rabbi Meir, there are two opinions in the Talmud, whether Rabbi Meir was... You guys know the story of Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir was so big that it says, we use the Mishnah of Rabbi Meir, right? And there was a man who would always honor Rabbi Meir when he would travel up to the temple. So it says that one year Rabbi Meir came in his journeys and he stopped by the guy's house and he noticed the guy had a new wife. And the new wife was extra friendly to Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir was uncomfortable. And he didn't know what to do. So he understood that this guy, his first wife had passed away and he had remarried. It's not the type of question you could ask in the woman's presence, what happened that there's a new missus in the kitchen. But he noticed that this woman was extra friendly to him and he was very uncomfortable with it. So the guy from the house went out to work and Rabbi Meir was going to go rest. So the wife comes in and gives him a drink. So he drank. He didn't want to be not nice to her. He finishes his drink and she gives him another drink. And before he knew it, she put him to sleep drunk. And then she came into the bedroom and undressed him and was intimate with him. And then the next morning, after the husband left the house, the wife comes in and she starts fooling around with him. And Rabbi Meir jumps back and he says, "What are you doing?" And she says, "Yesterday you had no problem being with me, now suddenly you're so pious." Rabbi Meir says, "No, I wasn't." And she says, "Yes, you were." And Rabbi Meir says, "No, you're making up a lie." And she says, "I'll prove it to you." And she starts talking about his birthmarks. She says to him, "I'll tell you everything about you. What do you want to know?" So Rabbi Meir looks at her and he says, "How'd that happen?" And she says, "What do you mean? You were a consenting adult. Now suddenly you're so pious?" Rabbi Meir runs out of the house. He runs to the Beis Medrash. He says, "Rabbis, what am I going to do? Rabbis, what am I going to do? She's a married woman. I don't know how it happened, but she's saying it happened. I can't deny it." There are two versions to the end of the story. One version says the rabbis told him, maybe when you were sleeping, she just undressed you, and she was able to see your birthmarks. That doesn't mean anything happened. You have no idea. You don't remember such a thing happened. So that's not, it doesn't prove anything. She wants to spread lies about you. You don't have to believe it. That's one version. The other version says they told him how to do tshuva. Meaning they said, if she says it happened, believe her that it happened. You have to do tshuva. So now, wait a second. You'll say, "Rabbi Meir, why'd you drink so much? Rabbi Meir, shouldn't you have paid attention? She was so friendly to you." Rabbi Meir, yeah, in hindsight, we look at it and we have all kinds of answers. On the moment, Rabbi Meir maybe made a wrong decision, maybe not. You look at it, now what? So Chazal gave us stories to deal with. They gave us two versions to this story, whichever one it was. At the end of the day, Rabbi Meir is still the giant we learn in his Mishnayot. Rabbi Meir worked on doing tshuva. Rabbi Meir said, "If I made a mistake," he sat with the rabbis and said, "Help me. Tell me how I have to fix what I've done." Here in Machon Meir, we believe in tshuva. So again, we look for someone we admire. We look for someone to learn from. But at the end of the day, Eli's children are going to desecrate the name of Hashem in their behavior. And the people are going to feel bad about the temple. It's natural to feel that way, but we have to be bigger than that. We have to be able to say, okay, these are inappropriate people. The Torah, as Rabbi Wein's famous line goes, don't confuse Jews with Judaism. Judaism is perfect. It's amazing. Jews, well, sometimes they make mistakes, and sometimes they do things that are not so perfect. We have to be able to see above that and build things better than that. Okay, so we began the story of Eli's children. Eli's children versus Shmuel. We'll do